We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Strava Craft Coffee is rich CBD-infused coffee that you can purchase in K-cups for your Keurig, whole bean, or ground. Purchase online for 20% off using code DNVR20. Order online. It ships to you incredibly fast. You can try it at Carbon Cafe and Bar, Drip Denver, Slow High Coffee, Blue Sparrow Coffee, and Max Market. CBD is non-psychoactive, has been known to help long-term migraines, decreasing anxiety, arthritis, IBS, etc. CBD has done wonders for me, and since I've been drinking Strava Craft Coffee, I find myself much less jittery, and I promise you a schedule and lifestyle in where I drink a great deal of coffee. I was starting to feel the effects of it, but CBD has given me a ton more energy and focus with none of the shakes and all of the negative things that come from coffee. So remember to go online, purchase for 20% off using code DNVR20.
And go. Ball in the air, deep right center field.
Two-run home run, Trevor Story. Way back, Myers, watch it go out. Chuck Nasty.
Two-run home run, David Dahl.
Nolan drives this high in the air, deep left field. Take a good look. You won't see it for long.
I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast presented by The Green Solution. Visit any one of their 17 Colorado locations or go online to mygreensolution.com. Use that promo code DNVR20 to get 20% off your entire purchase. I am your host, Drew Kreisman. I am the managing editor of DNVR Rockies. And on this episode, we've got a very very special guest, really two of them. Manny Randhawa, you all know very well, you love him. You've at least learned to enjoy the debates that he and I get into on this podcast over and over again. I know many of you have read most, if not all, of his book on the Blake Street Bombers. If you haven't yet, you can get it at Amazon, a lot of other places where books are sold. You can, if you're local, you can find an event, and we had one recently, and this is what you're going to hear of, where Manny will sign that book for you. And so really he became kind of the host of this podcast. You're not going to hear a whole ton from me because we had the author of the book there to interview one of the subjects of the book. And I'm talking, of course, about Dante Bichette, one of the all-time Colorado Rockies, both on and off the field. A personal favorite for pretty much anybody who rooted for this team when he was a member of it, and plenty of people who just know him in hindsight. Dante was incredibly gracious with his time. He was out at spring training during a game, just talking to us on his phone via Skype. So the audio sound quality isn't the absolute best, but I was... honestly, it came through a little bit more clearly than I thought it was going to. I was a little worried about that. It's going to get a little gravelly and poppy at times. There's a room full of us that get pretty animated and excited a handful of times. But
mostly I just wanted to be able to share this conversation with Manny and Dante. Also, Wayne Hagan, you'll hear his voice in here, original play-by-play man for the Colorado Rockies. I get into the conversation a little bit, a few other people there who had questions. Thanks to everybody who came out to the Baseball Museum. I'm going to be doing more and more content about the museum to show you what it's like and encourage people to get out there and check it out. They have got all kinds of really cool stuff, including a baseball ticket from the 1800s. They got jerseys up for the Bears and the Zephyrs. They got a ton of Babe Ruth stuff. A really, really interesting baseball museum. If you're a student of the history of the game, it's one of the best places in Denver you can go, especially if you're already over there by the ballpark. So we'll have pictures and video and all of that stuff out for you very, very soon. In the meantime, kick back with a Colorado Core from Breckenridge Brew. It's the cidery time of year. It's an absolutely perfect companion for what you're about to hear. I'll be dropping in with a few other commercials. There's one point where the computer stopped recording for just a minute, so you'll hear me jump in there and hopefully very smoothly transition it to the next part. But in the meantime, hopefully you're drinking some Colorado Core, you're enjoying your Breckenridge Brew, and you can sit back, relax, and listen to this conversation with an original Blake Street Bomber, Dante Bichette.
Looking good.
What's happening?
All right, so can you see us?
Yes, I
all
can
right,
see
you. Very good.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I should bring this closer. If you have trouble hearing the questions, I can repeat them for you.
Okay. Perfect.
Well, everyone, Dante Bichette, most of you know him as the should have been 1995 MVP of the National League. The man who hit the first home run in Rockies history and then the walk-off in the first game of Coors Field. Many of you were at that game. In the book, you know, the way I start this, start the narrative is, for the longest time, Denver had a lot of great baseball players who came through here, thrilled fans for a couple of years in the minors, and then left. And this is the Denver Bears room. This is going to be the exhibit. These are all the Denver Bear jerseys right here through the years, and a lot of important stuff from Denver baseball history in here. And that's where everything starts, because this town wanted baseball for such a long time and craved it. By the way, Dante, you see who's behind me right here?
Go ahead, give me again. I don't
think you heard. You see who's behind me here? There's Wayne Hagan.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's how I feel every day I look in the mirror. How are you, Dante?
Good. I'm doing great. How you been?
Doing well, and be sure and tell the bride I said hello.
I will. She's actually right around the corner. I'll tell her when we're done, man. It's good to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you, Dante, and I hope that we can hook up in the near future in person together.
That would be great. What you doing now?
I am doing a lot of speaking engagements. I just did one at the Air Force Academy for their National Character and Leadership Symposium, and I actually talked about the Blake Street Bombers, and I talked about you in particular.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
That's really good to hear. I'm glad.
You're the best, man. You were one of the most popular Rockies players ever, and it was because you gave back to the fans.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
No, it's a pleasure to have you, man. Thanks for doing this again. My voice doesn't project as well, I know. I get closer. So in the history of baseball in Denver, it dates back to the 1880s, and we finally had a major league team here. We finally got a major league team here in 1993, and we finally had a chance to see who would become the first major league stars in this town. And Dante Bichette, Andre Scalarraga, Vinny Castilla, Larry Walker, new Hall of Famer Larry Walker, and Ellis Burks became those guys. I mean, if you compare it to Florida, you know, they didn't really have, I mean, they had a couple guys who were there, but most of them left, and they didn't make that jump into stardom to be able to have their town claim them as their own, and we have that. So with that, I'm just going to get right to it. We're going to do a Q&A with you, Dante, and I'll relay the questions. In fact, I'll have Wayne do it because he's got the broadcaster voice.
And, Nice.
Yeah, and perfect. we'll do that, and we'll just take it as it comes.
Beautiful.
Okay, Dante, I have the first question, even though I don't deserve to. These are great fans. Tell them how this Blake Street Bombers name came together, because a lot of people really didn't know the truth.
You know, Wayne, it was when me and you were talking. Now, you give me credit, I'm giving you credit. I'm not sure who figured that out, but I remember it was when me and you were talking one night, right?
Absolutely, it was. And Joe Girardi was there. But you injected some enthusiasm about this, and you could actually foretell what was going to happen in the future, because you said all four of you got off to great starts. So what happened is Joe Girardi said, well, what about Boulder Bashers? And Dante says, no, that's where CU plays. And that's when Dante said to me, what street do we play on? I said 20th and Blake, and he said something that I can't recall. It wasn't Blake Street Bombers, and then he said Blake Street Bombers, and I said, that's it. Went on the air that night, and at that time ESPN did the highlights using a lot of radio calls, and so that night I started calling them the Blake Street Bombers. ESPN picked up on it, and that was the rest of it. Now, Woody Page will tell you that he did it in August. We did it in May, late May, and it was because of this man right here.
I remember, you know, what I remember is when we all sat down, and it was really exciting. Jerry McMorris, God bless his soul, was the owner at the time, and he said, guys, this is an opportunity for every one of you. This is a huge opportunity. And I remember taking that to heart, man. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us did on that team that year, but I'll never forget that meeting we had. It's like, it's new here. You guys are the first ones. And this is an incredible opportunity to just, you know, make history, I guess.
Which you did.
And I will say that, it's in the book, but a lot of these, most of these guys were kind of unknowns because of either injury or lack of playing time. And when they got here, there we go. And when they got here, they got their chance. And let's start with that. Let's start with Don Baylor and your relationship with Don in terms of how that started, how he meant so much in your professional life, but also in your personal life, and then how he got you here, and you were the guy he wanted, and then that led to everything.
It's all in the book.
That was good.
Keep shit in the book, man.
Well, I mean, I played for Don. He was my hitting coach in Milwaukee, and he came to me one day. He says, when you figure this out, you can run this league. And I was a part-time player. And at the time, I didn't really – hang on.
Somebody getting
– at the time, I'm not sure I really believed in myself. You're fine.
All right, apologies for the one technical difficulty experienced during this. Unfortunately, we missed the story here that Dante told about going home one evening and being incredibly tired and telling his wife that he just didn't think there was any way he could play the next day. And then he showed up, and it turns out Don Baylor had him out of the lineup. He was wondering if his wife gave him a call, if maybe that's just how in tune he was with Don Baylor. We'll hear a lot more about Don, though, when we get back into it. First, I've got to mention that if you head over to Bojo's and mention DNVR, you're going to get a free honey cheese bread with purchase of an entree. They've got 6 Colorado locations. This offer is good at all of them. Or they can do DoorDash and deliver it directly to you. It's made fresh daily, contains locally sourced honey. It's really delicious. Plus, they can offer gluten-free, cheeseless, and plant-based options. They've got you set. They've got a salad bar. We've got the big TVs for watching sports. There's really no better place to hang out, take in a pizza, and a true Colorado mountain pie than Bojo's. So remember to mention DNVR and get that free honey cheese bread with purchase of an entree. Let's jump back into our conversation kind of abruptly here with Dante Bichette.
The fact fastball, then then I know you probably need a day off. But he was an awesome guy, and the reason I got an opportunity, for sure.
And may I just inject one thing, that this is what Dante thought of Don Baylor. In 1995, when they won the wild card, I said, who do you think? Now, this guy should have been the MVP of the National League. That's true. But when I asked him, who do you think is the MVP of the Rockies, he goes, number 25. I remember you said that to me about Don Baylor. He was the MVP.
Yeah, he was awesome. Unbelievable. Most underrated manager. You know, he handled the pitching staff that year in 95, even though that playoffs didn't go well. That he got the most out of that pitching staff that I think any Rocky pitching staff's ever gotten out of a staff. It's awesome.
And tell us, Dante, about Gold's Gym, will you?
Gold's Gym. And behind the Green Monster, Fenway Park. Another Don Baylor story. I go over after batting practice, and I'm working out. I walk into the gym, and this girl walks in front of me. And I say, if she looks that good when she turns around, I'm in love. She turned around, I fell in love, but I was too scared to ask her out. So I didn't ask her out. I left after my workout and went back to the clubhouse and told Don Baylor. I said, man, I just met a girl I could marry. He goes, did you ask her out? And I said, no, I'm too scared. He made me go back to the clubhouse and ask her out, or go back to the Gold's Gym and ask her out. And that girl I married, and I'm still married to, and have two kids with. So, I tell you what, that guy was a big part of my life. Now that you keep saying it.
Well, I tell you what, let's take it here. Let's go to Shea Stadium, game number 2. You were hit by a pitch the day before by Doc Gooden. And you didn't know if you were going to be in the lineup, but there you were, and you began your run of making history for this franchise. When did it hit you that was it? That was the first home run and first run scored.
You know, I think we all knew that everything was a first, so we were all trying to hit that one. I want to say Galarraga might have got the first hit. Am I wrong?
No, that's right.
Yeah, I'm right. Day before off Doc Gooden.
Yep.
And I got the first hit by pitch, which did not feel good. I didn't think I was going to be able to play. Because you remember Doc Gooden could throw pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
And he hit me on the hand. And our training crew was so awesome, man. They were heat ice. And somehow, I didn't think there was any chance. Somehow, I was able to get in that lineup the next day and hit the home run off Brett Saberhagen, who's, you know, he's one of the best pitchers in the game at the time, and it was a great start. I mean, that was cool, and I think I still got that bat somewhere.
Oh, that's
actually
awesome.
That bat is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's right.
Hey, listen, I'm kind of skipping around here, but we can't do this without talking about Frank Cacciatore, when you went to the West Palm Beach Community College. And you were out of high school, and you had done a Dodgers tryout. Maybe you can tell us about that too, because that was fun. And then, and then after that, you know, there was a little bit of deception in getting you on the field, but it worked out.
Yes. You're talking about the junior college where I walked on, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm out of high school. I actually missed too many days, got kicked off the team. Wasn't a bad kid, but actually not kicked off the team. I was kind of suspended from school because I missed too many days of school. So I was, it was my senior year. I had nowhere to go. My little league coach, a guy named Hondo Wilkes, has just passed away. He's kind of my Mr. Miyagi, you know, of the Karate Kid. You know, he was my guy. He takes me to the college, the local junior college, and goes up to the coach, says, hey, we got a kid here who wants to try out. And the coach said, well, we already had tryouts. We really have a spot unless he's a catcher. My little league coach looks at him and said, that's what he is. He's a catcher. And I'm like, I never caught a day in my life. You know, this is junior college baseball. This is good baseball here in Florida, you know. So he said, all right, I'll tell you what. You come tomorrow morning at 4:30 a.m. and we'll see if you want to play ball. Well, 4:30 a.m. is they were having Hell Week. So I showed up the next day, and fast forward, you know, 30 years, there's no way he thought I was showing up the next day. But I was there at 4:30 a.m., and I ran about 10, 15 miles, okay, at 4:30 a.m. So he said, all right, you're serious. You want to try out. And he invited me back. They were having an inter-squad game that night, and I'm catching in the game, and I'm running back to the backstop because I can't catch anything. Never caught before. It's just – it's rough. But I got two at-bats, one off their number one pitcher. First pitch he threw me, I hit about one of the hardest balls I've ever hit, right at the left fielder, and he caught it. And then the next at-bat, I hit one of their better pitchers. I hit a ball that disappeared into the darkness, kind of like a Coors Field shot, man. And they still talk about that ball to this day. And
over the light tower, right?
That's a big deal.
Over the light tower, landed in the racquetball court now.
He landed in the racquetball courts, and they still talk about that ball. And I thought, you know, for sure I was going to, you know, he's not going to want me, because I can't catch. But after the game, he came up to me and goes, son, you're not a catcher. And then I'm like, you know, I kind of dropped my head. And he goes, but man, we love how you hit. We're going to keep you anyway. So
that's a great story.
That was my opportunity.
And with that, now we see Bo, and we see the incredible player that he's becoming. Well, he is, but is also becoming. And set records last year when he came up with the Blue Jays. And he is... I think people are just now starting to really find out how good of a coach, hitting coach you are, because we're seeing Bo, and he's getting all the attention, because rightfully so. But how different is it with his experience being groomed in this with you as his dad versus you, where your parents supported you, but they weren't baseball people, so you kind of basically got to the big leagues on nothing more than hand-eye coordination and raw power.
Yeah, you know, when I became a student of hitting, that's when it kind of took off for me. But it took a while. Bo had no choice. He kind of grew up in it. So that's why he's in the big leagues at 21 years old. And it took me until, you know, at 29 to figure it out. And he's a starter at 21. He's figured it out a lot. And he's just, I think he's going to be a lot better than I was. But, yeah, it's two different lives, because I've got a rubber arm. And my knees hurt, my back hurts, but my arm... I can throw batting practice forever, and he's taking advantage of it. I'm in the cage with him pretty much every day all off season, and he prepares hard, and he loves it. He's been a student of the game now, and hopefully has a long career.
So Dante came up with the Angels in 1988, and then was traded to the Brewers before. And his hitting coach with the Brewers was Don Baylor. And so that's when he told him that, you know, he could run this league once he started figuring it out. And once he came to Colorado, things took off. But does anybody have any questions about Dante's pre-Rockies life at this point? Should we just go on? Anybody have any questions? Yeah.
I'd like to know if Dante knew any of the other players in any capacity at the Rockies.
No.
If he knew before...
Did you know any of the Rockies, player-wise, before you got here?
No, I don't think I knew any of them, actually. Wow. I knew of them and played against them. I cannot tell you that I knew any of them personally, no. Don Baylor was the only one.
Wasn't it Brent Smith that said everybody had to put their names on a name tag? Yeah.
Might have been, yeah.
I thought it was Brent Smith.
It was a weird experience, because usually you go to big league camp and there's some kind of established something, you know, and just everybody was new and it was exciting. And that year was a blast, because you remember, we were getting 80,000, 60,000 every night. Yeah, right. It was crazy. I don't think there's ever been anything like it.
Yeah, unprecedented, right? And I talked to Larry about it, because he was in the building on the Expos.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, sunshine.
Not much of a cameraman.
That's all right. I asked Larry about it, because he was injured, but he was in the ballpark on opening day in 93, and because you guys were playing the Expos, and he said, I was really upset, particularly with that injury, because I couldn't play in front of 80,000 people, and this is something that probably never happened to me again. And I've heard fans talk about the electricity in this town. What was it like from your perspective?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, it was like nothing you've I've ever experienced before. 80,000. We could do no wrong at that point, of course, you know, because it was all new and nothing was expected. So for a good 3 years, I would say, 3-4 years, it was like that. But the open, the first year was just different. It was just different. I remember opening day, I looked up and it was a blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. And that's my boy right there. Not a cloud in the sky. And I looked up and there was this plane carrying a banner behind it. It said, Dante, hit this one, free butt for everybody. Oh, wow. I was like, man, I'm going to like this place.
You came into your own, and 94 and 95, unfortunately, there was a strike in between the two finest years of your career, really. That offseason was difficult for you for a number of reasons. Maybe you can tell us about that. And then also, how much it meant to you to open the ballpark as you did in such a crazy game and on opening night in 95.
Yeah, that was a tough offseason because of all that going on. And you're right. The best 2 years of my career were kind of strike short, which is a bummer because in 95, I really would have liked to see if I could have hit 50 homers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I felt, Wayne remembers, man, I hit 27 in the second half. So, I mean, I was hitting one pretty regular in the second half. So, it is what it is. And then they signed Larry Walker in the offseason. He was going to play right field. And I wasn't – I was a last minute thing. You know, they were trying to sign me, but it just wasn't working out. And at the last minute, Don Baylor called me and he says, listen, I don't care what they say. I want you on this team. All right. I know it sucks, but I want you on this team. And I did not hesitate. I got on the next plane and flew there. I said, that's fine. Because listen, I'm not playing at all if it isn't for that guy. So, it was tough. And then the opening night, when I hit the walk-off home run, it might not be a big deal for a lot of people. That was a big deal for me. And I ran around the bases, ran up in the clubhouse. I don't think I stopped running. I felt like Forrest Gump for a while. I mean, that was a huge night for me. And every spring training, or right when spring training, opening day starts, you know, ESPN or MLB, they'll show that on TV because there's not a lot of opening day walk-off home runs. But when they show that, I always get about 10 or 15 texts from people all over the place. Hey, you just hit a walk-off on TV. So it's resounding.
How many of you were there?
I was there.
One, two, yay. Three, four. Well, you were there. Uh-huh. We have a couple of special people here who one of them was at the game, and her daughter was in her stomach, but her daughter's here now.
Oh, my God.
There she is.
Hi there. Hi, Dante.
But we have a handful of people.
You still look young enough, so that's good. I'm afraid you're going to look old.
She was a Rockies fan from literally from the womb, right?
Yes.
So we had a few people here. We have a few people here who were there in the freezing temps. I think 43 players were used in that game, and what an incredible, incredible ball game that was. But does anybody have questions about that game in particular and that opening night? Everybody's shy.
I do.
Wayne will ask.
11-9, final score. Did you think it was going to be like that every game at Coors Field those first couple of years?
I didn't know what to think. We knew. We were told, listen, this is going to be a hairy offensive place. So I don't know. No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody realized it was going to be a lot of fun. I still think it's the greatest place to play baseball. I don't care. You know, I just think it's the greatest place to play baseball. And especially the Blake Street Bombers, man, because you could never had a big enough lead with us. And we knew it. That was the thing. We knew it. We never sweated, man. You could be up 6 runs going in around the 6th, 7th inning, and we were like, oh, we're going to get you.
You know what Joe Girardi told me about that when I asked him about that? He said about the last game of the season, which we'll talk about now in 95, when you guys were going for the wild card spot, He said 8-2 in the fourth. That's 2-1. and he also told, I haven't talked to you about our conversation, me and Joe, but it's in the book now. I don't know if you've gotten to it, but he said that you guys were such a strange couple, a strange pair, that he said here's how we can illustrate it for you. He said one weekend.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I didn't hear that.
All right.
Give it to me.
All right. So Joe said, here's how I'll illustrate our friendship for you. He said, when I went with my wife to stay with Dante and Mariana, the first time we went to stay with them, all we ate was pizza and chocolate chip cookies. Or, no, sorry. Sushi and chocolate chip cookies all weekend. And he had never had sushi.
Had never had sushi before.
But that last game in 1995 against the Giants, you guys get down 8-2 early. Tell us about how it felt for you guys and whether how confident you remained because of your offense in that park and the bullpen.
You're right. It was a combination of both. Our bullpen was so tough. We knew we had a shot there. I can tell you personally, I was not feeling great that game. I had felt good all up until that game. I got jammed a couple times. It was Leiter, right, in that game?
Yeah, Mark Leiter.
Leiter was in that game, and he was running in on my hand, so I didn't feel good. But I got a couple, clutch hits in that game, and I know we came back and got him. And all I can really remember is how high Curtis was getting.
What'd you guys
That's
do after?
That's what I really remember.
What'd you and Larry do afterwards?
Oh, yeah, me and Larry, we were up on the top deck of the stadium on the roof. There's a little deck up there, and people were down below in a crowd, and we were, signing all our clothes and throwing them out. We had left on.
Did you see the picture of that? Did you see the picture of that in the book? It's in the back. It's toward the end. I got a picture of it, yeah. It's in there.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Great. Whenever you guys have questions, just raise your hand. Yes.
Well, I was just curious, Dante, as the Brake Street Bombers are growing, the myth of all of them are coming about, was there a lot of camaraderie or competition among you as home run hitters? What sort of relationship did you have on the team as you're all gaining these numbers of home runs?
It was fun. Yeah, we did have a competition of who hit the most home runs and in batting practice, who hit the longest home runs.
Okay.
And it was fun. I remember the year I hit 40, the rest of them hit 30. And then the next year I hit 30 and the rest of them hit 40. So. And then Larry almost hit 50. So he kind of embarrassed all of us, but it was fun, yeah. We put the Bombers in the last group, and right when the visiting pitching staff had to stretch right by the batting cage, so all the pitchers on the visiting team had to watch us do this home run thing in BP, and it could be quite intimidating. I think that was half the battle when they came to Coors Field.
Nice.
Okay. EY told me you guys didn't let him in to your group.
What's that?
EY told me he didn't let you guys didn't let him in to your group, your BP group.
Yeah, no, EY couldn't hit our group.
Oh.
He could talk enough, but
Who took the scariest round of BP?
Who took what now?
The scariest round of batting practice.
You know what? I think early on, I hit the farthest balls of all of them. But for some reason, I think when I had my knee surgery, I lost a lot of weight. And I think after that, Galarraga would hit the farthest balls of all of them. Vinny never hit the longest ball, but Vinny was the best fastball hitter. I tell you this about us. That's why we were so good. Vinny was the best fastball hitter on the team. Okay, great story. You remember Billy Wagner threw 100. Vinny comes in. He throws Billy Wagner. Billy Wagner throws him 100-mile-an-hour fastball. He hits a dead center in the Astrodome. They all interview Billy Wagner. Hey, why would you throw him a fastball? He's the best fastball hitter in the league. And And Billy Wagner says, I throw 100. That's what I do. He said, if I face him tomorrow night, I'm going to throw the same pitch. Well, he faced him the next night, he threw the same pitch, and he hit it in the same spot.
Very true.
He was just the greatest fastball hitter ever. And Galarraga, in my opinion, was one of the greatest curveball hitters. If you looked at his highlight reel, he would consistently lean out and hit that breaking ball. He very rarely ever hit a fastball for a home run, and a lot of people never caught on to that because he had such an open stance that when he strode close, he would lean out on that breaking ball and kill it. And then I was, if you remember me, I was really a really good two-strike hitter. That was kind of my thing. I hit with two strikes. And then Larry was just kind of a great hitter.
That guy was pretty good.
One of us, at one point in the night, we're going to get you. No matter what style of pitcher you were, one of us had an answer for you. So that was fun.
The 1995 National League Division Series, you guys were the first wild card team. You guys had to play none other than the team of the 90s in the National League, the Braves. And it was weird because it was 2-3 then, so they had to come to Coors for the first two and then go back to Atlanta for the last potentially three. John Smoltz told me, and it's in the book, he said, we were scared to death because we knew that we're going into this crazy city that is rabid about baseball. New ballpark, electricity galore. He said it was like Atlanta in 91, you know, when they first went to the World Series. And you guys, and I try to make this clear in the book, you guys were right there. I mean, you guys were basically a couple of bounces different. The ball bounces differently a couple of times, as they say, game of inches. You guys are going up 2-0 to Atlanta. What do you remember most about that series? And please take us through the Greg Maddux at bat, which is one of my favorite parts of the book.
Yeah. What I remember most is how much of a bummer it is when it was all over, because I really feel like we really had a chance to win that World Series, and nobody thought we did, but we did, and that we did. And, you know, and you're right. It was one hit with a bases loaded, or just something here, and it could have blown it open. We could have won there. I remember how intense it was. I remember how locked in I was able to get. Cause
you hit 583, right?
Yeah, I got. I mean, I was so locked in. It was just.
That's good.
I mean, and that's the best pitching staff I've ever assembled.
Yeah. I'll say this at this juncture, Dante. If you go back and look at his numbers against Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, they're incredible. And in that series against the best pitching staff of the 1990s, he hit 583 in the NLDS, including an incredible home run given the circumstances.
Yeah, Greg Maddux. I use that as a teaching tool on hitting for some of these young kids, because it was the best piece of hitting I'd ever done. It was Greg Maddux. The first pitch he threw me was inside about 3 or 4 inches, and he got the call strike one, which he got a lot of calls. We know the strike zone was big for those Braves. And I looked back and said something to the umpire, like, come on, you know, that's a ball. It wasn't that nice, I promise you. But but I thought in my head, I said, if he throws that ball in there again, he did that for one of two reasons. He threw it in there because either he thinks I can't hit it, or he's trying to set up that breaking ball in the outside corner, trying to speed me up so I get fooled on that breaking ball in the outside corner. And then I thought, well, if he threw it in there thinking I can't hit it, he's right. I probably can't hit that pitch, especially 4 inches off. I just don't think I can keep it fair, you know? So I said, well, now if he's setting it up for a breaking ball off the corner, now I can jump out and hit that. And then I had one more thought before I said, all right, I'm looking breaking ball. I said, wait a second, this is Greg Maddux. He's not throwing it on the corner. He's throwing it 4 inches off the corner, 4 inches below the knees, and the umpire is going to call it a strike. So that's what I was looking for. I was looking for that pitch 4 inches off, 4 inches on the knees. He threw it there, whack, I hit it out to right field, and it was literally the best piece of hitting I'd ever done in my life. And it's a great teaching tool, and I take them through, and I'll show them the video of that. And
I'm about to do that right now, if you don't mind. I'm going to show these guys the video, because that was too good not to. I don't think you'll be able to see it, but I will. I'm going to show.
Don't go away.
Yeah, we'll be right back. Here we go.
Oh,
corner.
He's still there. Yeah, he's still there. He's in the corner.
You can tell I have a kid because my YouTube comes up. You can tell I like baseball. You can tell I have a kid because I got frozen.
Yeah.
All right,
here
we go. Yeah, exactly. All right, here we go. 1995. I just want them to see how perfect the pitch was in terms of where it was going to hit in your mind and where it was, because that's one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard in terms of you knowing where it was going to be. And here it comes. Let's see.
24 inches. And if you get a forgiving umpire behind,
watch where
the
space goes.
I mean, he's going to work you.
Infield double play that. And it's lifted to right field and down into the corner and curling. And it is a fair ball.
Sure, Wayne remembers that.
Hit it over the wall, obscured from the view of most of the fans here, and just out.
And Maddox had choice words.
Greg seems perplexed.
Yes. He's not.
He's going.
We're watching Greg Maddox's face right now.
Dante Bichette got him out with first time up. And
all right.
We
so
mistakes. Bichette get.
Yeah. So I just showed him that, and we watched Greg Maddox's face, and I know you said you could read his lips.
Oh, yeah. You can read his lips.
That's what Larry said, too. He said the best part of hitting home runs against the Braves was watching Bobby Cox's reactions. So that was a great postseason run. You never know what would have happened if you guys had gone and played the Reds. And who knows, you guys might have been playing the Indians in the World Series. I mean, John Smoltz said he didn't know which was the better lineup, you or the Indians that year. And if you guys remember the Indians of 95, that's high praise, you know. And so it was incredible. And unfortunately, you guys didn't get back there with the Rockies. But, you know, you certainly had a wonderful career even after that. A lot of people around here were scratching their heads at, you know, how in the world did Barry Larkin get the MVP award in 1995 over you? And then afterwards, you continue to put up numbers. What was your competition with Ellis Burks in 96, about 30-30?
Oh, you know, there's no real competition. I think he had a chance to get it. I was sitting on 29 bags. He was sitting on 29 bags. He's on first base. He stole. And I took the ball and let him steal the base. I don't.
You were at the plate? When that happened?
I was at the plate. Yeah, I could have swung and said, you ain't getting that back. But and then they gave an award to the first guy, the first 30-30 guy ever. And I think I actually got on base and stole the base right behind him. But it was kind of funny.
That's good. Questions from anybody? Yeah.
I'll pop up.
Okay.
We were talking about walk-up songs earlier. Can you go through selecting yours and what it meant to you or fans that you heard stories about?
This is funny because my son is actually in the process of trying to get a good walk-up song, but mine kind of came about accidentally. I was watching Dave Parker, and he walked up to Sledgehammer, so I stole that from Dave Parker.
Oh.
Okay. And somebody hit a homer, I think. let me get under here. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're good.
Okay, so anyways, he actually carried a sledgehammer on deck when I was a rookie. And they'd play the tune Sledgehammer, and he'd go up to bat. And then I was traded for him. So I felt like when I was traded for him, I get to take his song.
That's awesome.
Good deal. Thank you.
I've got one.
This is, by the way, this is Drew Kreisman of DNVR.
Hello.
He's probably spoken with you before at some point, but he's got a question for you.
I wanted to ask you about your reaction to Walker finally getting into the Hall of Fame. If you guys have talked or just how you found out what that meant to you. Because it meant a lot to everybody here in this room right now, too.
Yeah, I got a lot of interviews before that, so I feel like I had something to do with it. Because we almost had to talk these people into voting him in the Hall of Fame. And it shouldn't have been that way. He was a special player. He was a Hall of Famer. So we've talked a little bit. I told him, I think the text I sent him was, if I could borrow a line from The Natural, the movie The Natural, you're the best damn ball player I ever saw.
Wow.
And That's what I told him, and he was really thankful. And he's become quite a humble guy through this because he's just a good guy to talk to, man. And I'm glad for him. He was literally the most complete player I ever played with or ever saw him play. So definitely deserving.
Other questions?
Dante, I had a question. I think you're the first batter that I ever heard notice of from the announcers about changing his stance with two strikes. Now, I'm sure you're not the first one to do it, but you're the first one that I heard of. And was that something you learned from Don Baylor, or what put you on to doing that?
You know, I was a big fan of the science of hitting, Ted Williams. Mm-hmm. And Ted Williams actually did a little something. He flattened his bat out, he spread out, he inside out of the ball. And I took it there and took my stride out and made it my own thing. And if you actually get to see my son Bo play a little bit, he does the same thing. And that's the best part of his game also. So I'm glad I could pass that on to him. But yeah, that's the only reason I could play in the big leagues was to have a real good two-strike approach.
You're teaching guys that this right now. We're taking you away from it, but you're literally because it's happening next door. But you're teaching these guys this. There was an article in the Toronto Sun you guys should check out yesterday about Dante and how, you know, he's trying to keep it on, you know, keep it low key. But you know the things that he's teaching, and I talked earlier about how people are just now discovering how great of a coach he is because we're seeing it in Bo. But he is actually teaching guys to be all around hitters in an all or nothing era, in an era where we're three true outcomes. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. The Blue Jays are exciting because of the players they have, but, you know, get ready to see some of that. Would you consider, if somebody offered it, would you consider being a hitting coach somewhere again?
You know, I actually have been offered, and I can't grind it out, man. I can't do it every day because I get burnt out. I usually end up in a batting cage,
yeah.
But it's on my own terms, you know? Yeah. And I tried doing the hitting coach with the Rockies in 14, and I knew right off the bat, I just can't grind it, especially with two kids playing. You know, it would take me away from being able to watch them. So I'm actually in a good spot now where I can watch Bo and coach his team a little bit, but not full time. Right now I'm probably over that part of it. But in the offseason, I actually work with a lot of pro guys in the offseason.
Dante, I just want to say I have got to go. I've got a grandson who's going to be 5 years of age next month, and I promised him I'd go see him today. But I want to tell these fans with you listening, not only were you a great Rockies baseball player, but you were absolutely one of the guys that seized the opportunity. You loved the fans. You gave as much back to the fans as they gave you, and they gave you a lot of love. And I just want you to know how proud I am to say that I was there to witness what you did as a Colorado Rocky. And you're a great man. Mariana is a great woman. And you guys are a great family. So congratulations on a great life so far. A lot more to come.
And we'll get you out here. We'll get you out here so we can do something in person, too. That's awesome.
I'd love to come see everybody. And Wayne, thanks for the kind words. And you had a part of making me that guy. So thank you so much, buddy.
You were the best.
I know you probably are pressed for time. Let me know when you got to cut out. But what was it like to meet Ted Williams at the Hitters Hall of Fame in 1996 after your great season? And there were some pretty funny things that happened in terms of how he kind of put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, that was might be the coolest thing I've ever done, and I've got it on CD. Our whole conversation, and it was amazing. I mean, I'm talking to the greatest hitter that ever lived and might ever live, you know. And I actually had dinner with him and then had breakfast with him at his house the next day.
One-on-one.
And, dude, it was unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. I can't even put it in words, really, because we talked hitting, and it was like I was reading the book and learning all over again. And I felt like a kid, you know. But he was awesome. He was awesome.
Questions? Okay.
Yeah, so I have a related question. So, obviously, with Bo coming up and you having your own career, how is and stuff like launching and exit velocity playing a role? How has hitting philosophy changed from your career to now?
Help me out, man.
Yeah. So with launch angle and exit velocity and all of the advanced metrics we have now, how has hitting philosophy changed in your eyes?
Yeah. Well, you know, we always knew about the launch angle. Now they're trying to teach it. The problem with that is the pitcher has to throw that pitch. And that's what they've gotten away from.
You pitchers
know,
rarely throw what you want them to.
Hang on, guys.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're awesome, buddy. Thank you. The pitcher, if the pitcher throws a fat pitch, it's real easy to get a launch angle on that pitch. Problem is we're trying to create the launch angle with every pitch, and that's why we're getting in problems here. We're chasing a breaking ball off the plate. We're chasing a high fastball. We're getting underneath the high fastball, and we're striking out too much. And that's fine. If you want to go for a launch angle early in the count, I did. Try to, you know, hit a home run. You know, I try to teach it like this. You got two swings to get your launch angle or hit your homer or do damage, and then you got one swing to beat your opponent and be a team player and get your butt in the lineup tomorrow and get that big hit, you know. So that's that two-strike approach thing that I try to teach. And I try to teach them more, like you say, an all-around game, not just hit a homer or strike out, you know. But it has changed. We've got a lot of information now. The launch angle is definitely a thing. And basically what the launch angle is we found out what we always knew, but now the really smart people found out that if you hit the ball at 27 degrees at a 90 or 100 miles per hour exit speed, that is going to do a lot of damage.
Ted knew about it in the 40s, right? He was preaching that launch angle without calling it that.
Way back then. Getting the ball in the air is something a big power hitter has tried to do since the beginning of the game. So, you know, it's nothing new except now they're writing about it. And they got real fancy names for it and stuff. But
I'm going to let you go quick in a couple of minutes. But first, I want to ask you about when you signed with the Dodgers in 2003. Danny Evans, and many of you know Dan Evans, who is on the board of Sabre, and he former GM of the Dodgers, and he actually had Dante sign with him with the Dodgers in his last professional season. And one day, Dante's headed over to spring training. He's in his car, and he literally pulls off the highway because he had something that he needed to figure out. I'll let you tell him the story.
Well, yeah, that's when my oldest one hit his first home run at, I'm going to say, 8 years old. He hit a home run. And I missed it, and I pulled over, and I thought real hard about it, and I was 38, you know, I could probably still play 3 or 4 years, probably not as an everyday guy, I'm not sure, but I decided I couldn't miss another home run that he hit, and I had to go home at that point, so that's when I went home, and I retired right there on the spot. I actually drove to the park, took 2 at-bats, was thinking about it all day. And just when I walked off the field that day, I said, "That's it, I'm done."
And you said,
"I look back."
Yeah, you've said that the coolest thing you've ever done in your baseball life is taking Dante Jr. to the Little League World Series. You guys got there. So I mean, what was that experience like for you? Because what if there's anything we know about you after your career is that you're the baseball dad, and you have been with your guys, and we're seeing the fruit of that labor now. But what was that experience like for you with the Little League World Series?
Well, selfishly, it was my dream when I started. When I really wanted to be a great baseball player, the first dream was I want to win the Little League World Series. Because I was 10, and it was on TV. Remember? I mean,
yeah,
it's the coolest
Reggie.
Time of year.
Yeah.
It's the Little League World Series. I'm sorry, it still is the coolest time of year, and it's the toughest. I got to believe it's one of the toughest tournaments to win, because if you really think about the big leagues, I mean, that's 30 teams, but you think about a Little League World Series, man, that's the whole world, man. There's so many Little League teams trying to win that. And we got real close. We got to it. And I think we ended up third in the whole Little League World Series. And to do it with my son, and he actually was, you know, the guy who kind of carried the team a little bit. He was awesome, man. It was just unbelievable. And Bo was in the background. I got video of him. You know, he cried when we lost the game. He was about 5, you know, and it was a cool experience.
What do you think about the Rockies today? That's a tough question. That's a tough question to answer, but I didn't want it to go before that because they've been in so much turmoil. But two playoff seasons in a row, really bad last year, and then now they feel like they can do it. So what do you think about the current Rockies briefly and how what their chances are?
You know, I think the Rockies are so unpredictable. They've always been that way. I think the reason is they keep trying a different formula. You know, let's do pitching. Let's do ground ball defense. Listen, I think we were about as close. The first shot at it was the right formula.
I'm with you.
Get some big boppers in there. Make it exciting.
Have a good bowl.
Beat up people at home.
Yep.
Do the best you can on a road, but beat up people at home. Yeah. And that's where I'd like to see him go again. But like I said, they're just so unpredictable. Hopefully they figure it all out. Nolan is happy. Whatever. I don't know.
they're starting to use your pitching machine thing again on the road.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, way back when, I mean, Dante was doing this in 13, right, with you guys. Because he was all about
that. Trying to get him to do that.
Yeah.
Actually, they got to do it at home because that's when they don't see the good breaking balls.
Right.
Yeah, dude, they don't really need to bring it on the road, but that's all different.
Any other questions before we go? I want to bring in Joey. Joey is the guy, the reason why we're doing this here at the National Ballpark Museum. He is only in this and doing this job and doing this life because of you.
Yeah. So, hey, Dante, hey, how are you? I just wanted to say thank you, and I know I speak for a lot of fans. Back in 95, I was 8 years old, and you are the reason, not only I fell in love with baseball, but you're the reason why I've made a career out of baseball. So I just want to say thank you for everything that you have done.
Wow, buddy, that's awesome to hear, man. And thank you, because I'm old now, man, and I don't get that love very often. I appreciate that love right there.
Well, I
give it right back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, next time you're in Denver, along with Manny, we'll get you here in the museum because you're gonna love all this baseball stuff in here.
Oh, you love this place.
Yes, yeah, so you'll go crazy. But really, thank you. And like I said, I know I'm not the only fan to feel this way, but thank you for everything you have done. So, my life would not be how it is today without you. So thank you.
Wow, that's awesome, man. That is awesome.
And
God bless you.
before we let Dante go, any other questions? Dante, you're the best, man. Thank you for taking time out.
Thanks, Dante. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, man.
Good times, and I hope you guys have many more.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. And we'll be in touch, man. We're going to try to get you out here and do something in person. It'd be a lot of fun.
Look forward to it.
All right, man.
All right.
Thanks
Thank
a lot.
You.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
It's going to snow here tomorrow.
Dude, guys, I was actually...
Oh. I was going to say, we get a little hitting instruction. All right, I want to thank Dante Bichette for taking that much time out of his schedule to talk to us about the Bombers and the Rockies and just tell some fun stories and have a good time. Obviously, want to thank everybody that came out to the National Baseball Museum and all of the people at the museum. You guys are absolutely fantastic. Shout outs to everyone, Bruce, Rayleigh, Joey, Mariah, Stacy. Thank you so much for making it a fun event. Hoping to reach out to you more and more as we, you know, hope to highlight a lot of really cool things going on there for baseball fans that will be going on throughout the summer. So you'll be able to find me over there quite a bit this next year. And of course, Manny Randhawa for doing all of the legwork. As you heard, this was basically his event. I had planned to jump in there some more, but hey, this was one of the easiest podcasts I've ever done. It was nice to just kind of be a spectator as much as anything for that. And hopefully we'll be doing more of these with other members of the Bombers, maybe even hopefully a panel with multiple guys on it. So we're working on all kinds of stuff. Make sure you've got Manny's book. Be on the lookout for some cool stuff you're going to be able to get from us at DNVR at the locker. So go over to the DNVRlocker.com and check out all of our cool sales and we got hats, we got shirts, we got all kinds of cool stuff and even more headed your way. Thanks to everyone for hanging out and listening to this one.
following us on social media, subscribing to the DNVR and all the podcasts, and just generally continuing to be absolutely awesome. I promise you that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark. This episode of the DNVR Rockies podcast was presented by Green Mountain Dental. Located in Lakewood, they're the best damn family-owned dentist in the metro, and they're extreme Colorado sports fans just like all of us. Schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam, and you'll receive a free Sonicare toothbrush. Green Mountain Dental treats you like family. They're a longtime DNVR partner. They show us love, so you got to show them some love. They're only 15 minutes from downtown Denver, and the first step to taking care of your good health is taking care of your teeth. So get a cleaning, x-ray, and exam at Green Mountain Dental and receive a free Sonicare toothbrush today.